The sun sets later in Connemara, in the west of Ireland. By midsummer, it only begins to retreat after 10 p.m. The brightness can entice you to stay out late, the day stretching on without end in this remote corner of the island. It is June 21st, a Friday, the longest day of the year. Barbara Walsh and her extended family know what the sun dipping below the horizon means for them. One day fewer before the pain of immigration will visit them again. Soon, two of the family will leave for a life far from here, just as so many from this isolated place have done across centuries. The family gather in the local pub for an American wake, a very Irish farewell to the still living, who are soon to depart. Determined to make the most of these final moments together, they leave the local pub in rural Connemara and travel 3.5 kilometres along dark rural roads to Barbara and her husband McDara's home for tea and sandwiches to keep the party going, to stave off the inevitable. 14-year-old Jackie Walsh is in the bedroom she shares with her sisters when her parents arrive back with their guests. She overhears her mother sneak into the room with a female friend. They've come to admire the newest addition to the family, 9-month-old baby Andrea, who sleeps peacefully, the youngest of the 7 children in the home, each as adored by their mother as the ones who came before them. The friend jokes that she could run away with the baby, but Barbara says, "Nobody will have my Andrea." The door closes again as the two women head back out to the party. Jackie returns to sleep, safe knowing her parents are just a few steps away. When Jackie wakes up again at 4 a.m, the house is silent. Everyone dispersed back to their own homes. The kitchen is clean, any remnants of the gathering tidied away. Barbara sleeps softly on the couch. Jackie tries to wake her mother to tell her to go to bed. When she refuses to wake up, Jackie fetches a pillow from the hot press and pulls a blanket over her, before returning to her own bed. This will be the last time Barbara Walsh is ever seen. When a serious crime is committed in Ireland, the Gardaí call in a team of forensic scenes of crime examiners from the Technical Bureau, and for 25 years I was a part of that team. My name is John Sweetman. I was there to help read the silent and often hidden clues at a crime scene. I saw what killers tried to hide, fingerprints unknowingly left behind, murder weapons hidden in plain sight, handwriting that betrayed a lie. Every detail told the real story, and now I'll tell you those stories. In this podcast from Go Loud, I take you inside some of Ireland's most haunting crimes. This is Lines of Inquiry, a Go Loud original podcast that looks beyond the headlines, following the evidence step by step and uncovering the stories behind these investigations. In this episode, the mysterious vanishing of Barbara Walsh, a mother of 7 gone without a trace, the truth of what happened locked away within a tight-knit Gaeltacht community, and the 40-year search for answers. Barbara Walsh was born Barbara Lydon in 1951 outside of Carna, County Galway. Located within the Gaeltacht in Connemara, Carna is a small rural village 50 miles from Galway City. It sits on a stretch of boggy and battered land referred to by the Irish-speaking locals as Iris Éireannach, the Windy Peninsula, a stretch of land jutting out into the Atlantic Ocean. It is so close to the sea, in fact, that when the tide came in during a storm, it would sweep through the front door of Barbara's childhood home and right out the back door. The family moved out of this house eventually, but stayed close to the sea. In a village as isolated as Carna, jobs were hard to come by. The sea provided opportunity, boat building, fishing, and harvesting seaweed kept families going. The land was too rocky for much more than grazing sheep, the terrain inhospitable to all but the hardiest creatures. Outcrops of granite are scattered across the landscape, carved by aeons of wind and rain. The entire place is shaped by the infinite force of the Atlantic Ocean. The marshy bog is scarred with trenches, where for generations locals have used slans, a kind of two-sided turf-cutting tool unique to Ireland, to cut away banks of turf laying the dark sods on top of rushes, or piled in neat stacks to dry, so it can be used to heat the homes. Like everything in this part of the world, it's tough and physically demanding work, but it's the cheapest option for a lot of poor families. The area is dotted with lakes of varying sizes, some as small as puddles, others deep bodies of dark water. On faraway hills and mountains, the scars of abandoned potato ridges remain visible, left behind during the famine by families who perished or emigrated to escape. In the years since the famine, immigration remained as a constant for Irish families. Approximately 10 million people are thought to have emigrated from the island since 1800. The Great Famine of 1845 to 1852 and the century after decimated Western Ireland. It was first hunger and then the lack of any hope for work that drove generations of people from home to seek better chances somewhere else. America, Australia, England. Barbara was no exception. In her late teens, she married MacDara Walsh, older than her by about a decade. They already had their first child. The young family moved to England. The two native Irish speakers found themselves in Leicester, a Midland city home to 400,000 inhabitants. It was a sharp contrast to the rural parish of 450 people that had been their entire world until then. Perhaps being surrounded by so many people was jarring for the pair, or perhaps, both being native Irish speakers, they felt out of place speaking English all day long. Maybe they wanted to raise their children with family around them. Or maybe they were simply homesick. Regardless of the reasoning, the young couple soon decided to return home to Connemara and settled in the small townland of Roisin na Manach to raise their growing family. Here, the children would grow up as their parents had, with Irish spoken all around them. Although use of the native language was by then long in decline across the country, in Connemara it remained the first language. At that time, English was very much a second language for locals, something they learned in school out of necessity, but not one ever spoken at home. By 1985, Barbara and MacDara Walsh had seven children, ranging from 17 years old to just 9 months. Years earlier, when Barbara was just 22, the couple had lost two children, twin daughters Irene and Rita, who died of sudden infant death syndrome, or cot death as it was known then. They were just 3 weeks old, and they died on Christmas Eve. In the 1980s, Ireland was in a deep recession, and unemployment rates were upwards of 15%. Like many other locals in Carna, MacDara, who was also known as Mickey Andrew, provided for the family through seaweed harvesting and fish farming. He had a small rowboat, a type unique to Western Ireland, known as a curragh, which he used to go fishing in the sea. The family grew their own vegetables and kept cattle. A fun-loving and vibrant 33-year-old, Barbara took good care of her children, spending summer days with them on the nearby beach, having picnics and teaching them to swim. She was a lively and energetic woman and a caring mother. The family had recently built a new house with the help of the county council, and house-proud Barbara took great joy in the fact it had running water, unlike their previous home. Without a car, the couple would walk or cycle the 3 kilometres into nearby Carna village along a narrow road, bordered by stone walls, with fields either side full of low-lying heather and furze bushes. Carna was a small village, but it had much of what the family required. A church, school, shop, and a pub. It was in this local pub, T. Moran's, that Barbara and her family spent their last night together. It was the 21st of June. The weather that month had been disappointing, generally dull and very wet. Across the country, turf, wood, branches, and brambles were being stockpiled for bonfires to celebrate upcoming St. John's Eve, an old summer tradition held every June 23rd. Local politicians across Galway County were reacting to the first results of the previous day's council election as the news trickled out from the count centres. MacDara's siblings were on a rare trip home, their attempts at emigration having lasted longer than his own. His brother Patrick had returned briefly from Australia, and his sister Catherine was home from the United States, with both due to return to their adopted homes in the coming days. They had long journeys ahead of them, likely days of travel, and the vast distance as well as the cost of the journey made return visits to Ireland infrequent. Without a phone in their house, communication between McDara and his siblings must have been minimal while they were separated, so all the more important to make the most of this brief time together. The Walsh family were not the only crowd out that night. The pub was owned by a local councillor who was celebrating success in the election with his family and supporters. Suddenly, their night was cut short when word reached the pub of the unexpected passing of a senior figure in the village and an important mentor to the owner. The party was quickly ended and the doors of the pub shut to allow the family to mourn in private. Suddenly finding themselves outside, the Walsh family wondered where to go next. The group had since expanded to include two local members of the Gardaí, along with some neighbours and other friends. Wanting to stay together and keep the party going for a while longer, they all returned to Barbara and McDara's home in Rushine na Manach for tea and sandwiches. When would the friends and family all be together again like this? It could be years, if ever. As they arrived at the Walsh home, Barbara went to the kitchen with her eldest daughter, 17-year-old Catherine, making tea and sandwiches for the revelers, welcoming them in. Barbara made that brief stop into a bedroom to check on her newest addition, baby Andrea, just 9 months old, who she admired with her friend before returning to the party. Connemara is renowned for its rich traditions, and it's easy to imagine the lively Irish music that could have been played that night. Brooms laid out on the floor for the Shannos dancing, lilting voices singing songs passed down for generations, songs that spoke of the pain of heartbreak, immigration and colonization, and of course the old yarns being spun by the storytellers among the group. A night full of life, celebration and, as is the way with Irish songs and stories, the ghosts of the past. The gathering continued until the early hours of the morning, but by 4 a.m. the house was silent. 14-year-old Jackie Walsh woke up and headed out of the bedroom. She saw the kitchen, where any evidence of the party that had only ended a few hours ago was already tidied up. She made her way through to the sitting room, where her mother slept on the couch. Jackie reached out to Barbara and shook her to try to rouse her and send her to bed. Barbara refused to stir, so Jackie went to the hot press and fetched a pillow to place under her mother's head and pulled a blanket around her. Then, satisfied that at least her mother's night on the couch would be more comfortable, Jackie headed back to her own bed. When the children woke up the next morning, there was no sign of either of their parents. There was no initial cause for concern. They assumed that both parents had made the regular Saturday morning trip into town to buy food for the week. It was only later, when McDara returned alone, that they realised that Barbara Walsh had vanished. When the family first stirred on the 22nd of June 1985, there was no concern about the whereabouts of Barbara Walsh. McDara had already cycled into town as he always did on Saturday mornings. The children assumed that their mother had gone along with him. Her eldest child, Catherine, already 17, was capable of looking after the younger kids while they waited for their mam to reappear. When Barbara did not arrive back with McDara, it became clear something was wrong. Although the kids were still young enough that they could not truly make sense of what was happening, they noticed that their mother was still absent and that no explanation had been offered. McDara headed away again, this time to see Barbara's parents, hoping that his wife might be visiting with them. He visited her father and then crossed over the bridge that leads to Muinish Island, where her mother lived, 6 kilometres away. But neither of her parents had heard from Barbara. The Walsh family lived over 3 kilometres from Carna village and 50 miles from Galway city. They did not have a car and Barbara did not have a passport. There was no sign she had packed anything. She left without her glasses and shoes. It seemed that Barbara had left in what she was wearing the night before, black jeans and a white top. A beige jacket belonging to daughter Jean was also missing, presumably worn by her mother. More strangely, it appeared that high-heel shoes belonging to Barbara's sister-in-law had gone missing. They had been left under a small table beside the TV, but were now gone. McDara's sister, Catherine, who owned the high heels, had left the party when things quietened down, but returned to the Walsh family home and went to bed a few hours later, leaving her shoes down near the door. Sometime after Jackie placed a blanket on her mother, Catherine woke up and left the house. It's possible that she took her shoes with her, or that Barbara Walsh was wearing them when she disappeared. Catherine returned to America soon after and passed away a few years later. The family never found out whether she had taken the high heels with her, or if she had seen Barbara asleep on the couch before she left early that morning. For the first few days, they waited and hoped Barbara would walk back through the door. The kids were sent to stay with their relatives. Eventually, a week later, McDarrah reported Barbara missing to the local Gardaí, two of whom had been at her house the night before she vanished. The Gardaí's response was surprising. By today's standards, it was almost baffling. They appeared to have no urgency to mount an investigation. There was no community search arranged. No visits door to door to ask if anyone had seen the missing woman. There was no combing of the beaches nearby. In fact, locals were not made aware of her disappearance at all. At least not in the way we would imagine they would have been. There was mention in the village that she was gone, but not missing. Not a word of concern that maybe something had happened to her. But just word she was gone. Gardaí told the family that it was not unusual for someone to walk out on their responsibilities, and that people are allowed to leave home without telling anyone where they're going. McDarrah made a statement to Gardaí in which he said that Barbara had previously left for a week before coming back. It seems likely this encouraged their dismissive way of thinking, although this casual attitude towards missing persons was already pervasive within the guards at the time. The then head of the Missing Persons Bureau, Sergeant Noel Kelleher, said in 1986, "What may appear to a spouse to be totally mysterious begins to make sense when we ask around among workmates and colleagues. It was commonly accepted that a person may run away, usually to England, and not be missing at all, but rather starting a new life for themselves away from whatever troubles haunt their past." The investigation that was conducted in 1985 was brief. That night at the party in the Walsh home, two of the guests were local Gardaí. They had been some of the last people to see Barbara Walsh alive. They were the ones asked to investigate the disappearance, a job that would involve asking questions of those people they had been socialising with just a few nights previously. Best practice in a case like this would have been for those guards to excuse themselves from the case and allow detectives from a different station to investigate, or for the superintendent to make a decision that they would be reassigned. But for reasons we still do not fully understand, this did not happen in this case. Gardaí from both the local station and a larger district station in nearby Clifton were involved in the case. And while some individual Gardaí may indeed have felt it was worth investigating, many in the area did not share that attitude. Barbara's brother, Pádraig Lydon, in particular questioned the Gardaí's handling of the case. In recent years, he has claimed one guard had attempted to look into the case at the time, but was seen to be stirring things up and was told to drop it and not go any further with it. It's unclear when this attempt at an investigation took place or why it was ceased. Gardaí made some brief inquiries to hostels in Galway City, but there was no record of Barbara having checked in anywhere. It's also unclear whether anyone ever made contact with Catherine, McDarrah's sister who left the house early in the morning, to ask her if she had seen Barbara before she headed away. Or it seems to ask her if she had taken the high-heeled shoes that had been lying under the table during the night. Those shoes had gone following Barbara's disappearance, and it appears unclear if it was Barbara who had taken them or Catherine. There are things within this story that defy belief, details that feel like they don't add up. There were a small number of interviews conducted by Gardaí. They interviewed 14-year-old Jackie in the family home. However, these interviews were undertaken in English, in an area where Irish was the first language. Looking at this through the modern lens, it may not seem a glaring oversight, but in 1980s Gaeltacht Connemara, Irish was the first language. The people Gardaí spoke to gave their statements in their second language, a language they use rarely, a language that limited them. So many Irish phrases do not have a direct translation into English. In fact, this is so common that even outside of the Gaeltacht regions, Irish words regularly appear in English conversations, as there simply is no direct version in the English language. Words like Maria, Thomas, Flahul, Crack, When we translate crack to simply fun, it loses its true meaning. Any Irish person would tell you, crack covers much more, and its meaning can change depending on the context. It's all about nuance. And in a case like this, where so little is known, the nuance lost in translation should not be taken for granted. One of those few interviews did reveal that Barbara and McDara had had an argument at the pub on the night of Barbara's disappearance, and it was over who would be invited back to the house. This row continued when the group arrived back to the family home in Rushy in the Manach. From discussions with local sources, which we undertook while researching the story, it appears that this was not particularly unusual for Barbara and McDara, that their relationship was not always a happy one. Whatever information was gleaned during that initial investigation, however, was not enough as the investigation slowed and stalled. The family's questions remained unanswered. Just a few weeks after Barbara disappeared, her brother, Pádraig, and sister Mary were frustrated that they appeared to be the only people looking for her. In hopes of raising awareness of the case, they went to a local journalist, Mairtín O'Cahan, with concerns about the case and about the poor attempts at investigation by the local guards. This was the first time he had heard of the disappearance. Seeking to get more information to include before broadcasting the notice on Radio na Gaeltachta, Mairtín went to the district station to speak with the Gardaí. They told him that the case was not suitable for public reporting, as they did not even know if Barbara was truly missing, and so they couldn't confirm anything for his report. They repeated their position that a person can leave home and she might simply have walked out. Accepting their word, he did not report on the disappearance, at first. Mairtín kept a close eye on the case, though, and returned to ask Gardaí about it several times over the coming weeks. Eventually, on another visit to the Garda station to inquire about it, this time Gardaí relented and told him that it would be okay if it was publicised. It appears that this was perhaps nothing more than a deeply held belief that this was not a story worth talking about, and was just a mother who had run away. A broadcast went out describing the 33-year-old woman, 5'8" in height, medium build, brown hair, with a plea to contact the family or any local Garda station with any information. Many in the town and surrounding areas were surprised to hear of the case. Until this point, now months after that night in June, there had been no apparent fuss made about the disappearance by the Gardaí and media alike, up until that singular radio piece. Unlike the more high-profile cases that would follow in the next number of years, which would see photographs of young women across newspapers, appeals on the radio, and discussions with Gay Byrne on The Late Late Show, the biggest television show in the country, there was no attention given to Barbara Walsh. Why not? Why was this notion that she might just have walked out the door encouraged? These are some of the central questions that plague this case, as mysteries around the response layer upon the central mystery of what happened that night. At the heart of this indifference lies the notion that Barbara, or indeed any woman, could simply walk out the door one night. The belief that a mother of seven could stand off the couch, choose to leave her children behind, and wander into the pitch black night, miles from anywhere. She could simply vanish, and that was more likely than the possibility there may have been some kind of foul play worth investigating. Any good investigator will question assumptions, but when we look at what was not asked, we can wonder if that initial assumption was challenged at all. Still, her family held on to the belief that she was simply missing and would one day return. In 1986, a year after Barbara's disappearance, McDara spoke to the Irish Independent newspaper. He revealed that he believed she could be in England, if she was still alive. However, neither Barbara's sister working in London, nor any of their old friends in Leicester had heard from her. This interview was one of the only reports on Barbara's case at the time, along with the appeal on Radio na Gaeltachta. Following the story becoming public, there were rumoured sightings of Barbara in Galway City that raised the family's hopes, but they were quickly disproven. When Barbara's father died, just 1 year after she had vanished, the children convinced themselves that this would bring her back. Surely, if she was still out there, then her love for her father would prove stronger than whatever had driven her away. But at the funeral and the wake, with the children clinging to that faint flicker of hope, Barbara did not appear. As the years went on, the family slowly came to accept what they had been told. She had left them. 2 years after she was last seen, one of her daughters cleared out her belongings. Their presence and the constant reminder of the loss had become too much to bear. McDarrah raised the 7 children alone. In the close-knit community, a stigma was attached to them now. They were the children whose mother had left them. The shame that came from thinking they had been abandoned created a sense of secrecy. As years went on, Barbara's name was seldom spoken. McDarrah did not speak of her. He would never mention her again. Her husband bottled it up. And on the rare occasions when the children did bring up their mother, he refused to talk about her and became upset. As time went on, the children learned to simply leave it be, to live with it silently. But of course, her absence was ever present in their daily lives, and her memory vivid in their minds. After a brief illness, McDarrah Walsh passed away in 2007, aged 67, more than 20 years after his wife first went missing. His daughter Jackie remembers him as a caring father who took on the role of two parents in the time after her mother disappeared. She has said she believed he died a broken man and continued a silent search for answers on what happened to his wife. As the years passed, the story of what happened to Barbara became entangled with rumour. Some of these rumours involved suspicion of local people. Some involved talk of love affairs and jealousy and of Barbara leaving with another man. There was talk that she was in Australia or England. Some of these stories seemed to be purely fantastical pieces of gossip, arising from years of silence that thrived in the vacuum left by the total lack of anything factual to counter them. From what we've been able to learn, those rumours remain just that. Rumours. Stories that may in some cases have in them a thread that could unravel the entire mystery, but nothing concrete. And as those rumours swirled over the decades, they only served to add layers to the pain of Barbara's family, who had to hear them all. Around the time of McDarrah's death in 2007, Barbara's case was reopened. It's not known exactly what new lead caused this reinvestigation, but we do know that it made someone unhappy. Gardaí received letters purporting to be from the Walsh family. They claimed that the revived probe was upsetting them and dragging up old shadows from the past. However, no one within the Walsh family ever stepped forward as the author of these letters. It was never proven who sent them, whether it was a family member or simply somebody purporting to be from the family in an attempt to derail the reinvestigation. In September of 2008, Carna Garda Station was vandalised by stones thrown, smashing all the windows in the building. And a few weeks later, in mid-October, the building was set on fire in an arson attack, which caused extensive damage. The local guards were left without a station for a number of months, and while we don't know whether it was due to the letters, the damage to the Garda station, or simply a lack of leads, in the following months the investigation once again stalled. In 2009, Jackie Walsh, the last person to see her mother alive, went to the missing persons section of the Garda website. When she typed in her mother's name, there was nothing to be found. Once again, Barbara Walsh had vanished. Up to this point in her life, Jackie had quietly resigned herself to never finding answers about her mother's disappearance on that summer night in 1985. She had not even told her children about what had happened to their grandmother. Instead, she told them that Barbara had passed away. To bolster this story, she would bring them to her grandmother's grave. Her grandmother was also called Barbara Walsh, and Jackie would tell her children that this is where her mother had been laid to rest. She was afraid to pass on the same burden to her children, to curse them with the same unanswered questions. She didn't want them to think she might one day decide to leave them as well. But that quiet resignation could only last so long, and it was when she saw her mother's omission from the missing persons database that Jackie decided she would search for answers and fight for the recognition her mother had deserved but never received. She began raising awareness of her mother's disappearance and publicly demanding that Gardaí rectify her omission from the list of missing people in Ireland. In 2010, 25 years after she first went missing, Barbara Walsh was added to the Garda Missing Persons website. Now determined to get answers about their mother's case, in 2014, the family wrote to the Garda Commissioner, Noreen O'Sullivan. They explained the concerns they had with the initial investigation. A number of these concerns are clear to see. Two Gardaí who were socialising in the Walsh home the same night Barbara went missing then led the investigation into her disappearance. There was the total lack of action and urgency early on, the glaring questions seemingly not asked, the detail of the statements lost in translation, and many others besides. Presented with what was a case of inadequacies in the initial Garda investigation, in 2015 the Commissioner ordered a cold case review. A senior investigating officer was appointed and an incident room established. It would be the first time the story of Barbara Walsh would become known across Ireland. When the Garda Serious Crime Review Team is assigned to a case, they begin by reviewing the existing case notes. But as the initial investigation into Barbara's disappearance was so thin, there would not have been much pre-existing material for the new investigators to work with. With a case like this, where the initial investigation was so bare, the team must start from scratch. The cold case investigators completed 66 interviews, including with people who were at Barbara's house the night she disappeared. They unearthed 114 new lines of inquiry. They heard all of the rumours that hung in the air in Connemara over the years when no answers emerged. And amid the dearth of historical information and the swirl of present-day rumours, the new investigators set about reaching three decades into the past and determining what facts they could find about Barbara Walsh's disappearance. The investigators explored the possibility that Barbara Walsh was already dead when 14-year-old Jackie saw her on that couch that fateful night. Perhaps her body was still warm to the touch, but her breath stopped forever. Gardaí explored stories Barbara had emigrated to Australia. They made inquiries through Interpol and found no trace that Barbara ever left the country. They confirmed she did not even have a passport in her English or Irish language names, and it was determined that she had never applied for a PPS number. As is now fairly standard in a missing persons case, the detectives working on the case took DNA samples from her family to add to the case file. But without a body or a lead suspect, the investigation couldn't be upgraded from a missing persons case, and so the investigation was constrained and their resources limited. They investigated reported sightings of a woman walking near Carna in the early morning hours of June 22nd, when Barbara was last seen alive. None of those leads led to anything. All were discounted following investigations. But critically, Gardaí did come to one central belief, that there were people in the local area who did know something. Maybe not the whole story, but information that could prove critical. This tallied with the view of Barbara's daughter Jackie, who would later say she felt that in a small community the whole story was framed in a certain way to make it so nobody probed too deeply. She told the Irish Independent in 2020, "I think the view was taken that Mum was a nobody. It was a small village that was very clannish back then, and there are a lot of secrets being kept about what really happened on the night she disappeared." And she had one more specific theory about what had led to her mother leaving the home that night. She believed that a knock at the window from someone outside had caused her mother to rise from the couch and leave the home. In the cold November of 2015, Gardaí undertook a search at Barbara's former home and the family farm. 8 acres of boggy land were inspected by investigating Gardaí and the Garda Technical Bureau. They moved across the uneven terrain, battered by the wind whipping off the Atlantic nearby, searching for clues, for evidence, and searching for Barbara's remains. DNA can survive for anything from a few hours to years or even decades, depending on environmental factors like temperature, humidity, and water exposure. Dry, cool, and dark conditions will preserve DNA for decades, while factors like rain, sunlight, and high humidity significantly accelerate degradation. Unfortunately for the members of the Garda Technical Bureau brought in for these searches, one of the wettest places in the country is just 50 kilometres away from Carna. There is very little that can survive 30 years outside in the brutal exposure of Connemara. Likewise, fingerprints can be destroyed quite quickly by natural elements, and while it is possible for a print to survive an indefinite amount of time given the right conditions, the chance of any fingerprint of significance being found after 30 years is highly unlikely. At an outdoor crime scene in general, evidence can be degraded quickly. The wind and rain, insects and other animals, all work together to break down the fibres, hairs and other small details that a member of the technical bureau might be looking for. Some fibres may last longer in certain situations, such as being trapped in curly hair or in underwater conditions. but in general this evidence degrades quickly. Some rougher fabrics tend to hold onto fibres more tenaciously than smoother ones. So a pair of denim jeans, for example, may hold onto some evidence better than a smooth nylon rain jacket. But this is only of use to Gardaí if something is found. The last movements of the victim can play a big role, because more activity can lead to a faster loss of fibres. When investigators find remains after a period of time like in this case, the chances of finding any usable evidence would largely come down to the level of decomposition of those remains, and that would depend entirely on the conditions the body had been laying in. Soft tissue can mummify in arid and dry conditions, or be preserved in cold, moist or sealed conditions. There are cases of bodies dating back to between 200 and 400 BC being found preserved by the highly acidic and oxygen-poor environment of the bog which makes up the Connemara landscape. Of course, any remains discovered could offer vital clues for investigating Gardaí, including trauma such as broken bones, or even preserved clothing or soft tissue like hair. It would also allow the case to be upgraded to a murder investigation, allowing for greater allocation of time and other resources. But perhaps, even more importantly than that, for the family of Barbara Walsh, the discovery of a body would be much more than just an important piece of evidence. It would be the closure that her family has sought for so many years. The loss of a loved one is always cruel. To lose them suddenly and without explanation is even worse still. But to lose someone and to never be able to know if they are alive or dead, to live with that doubt, to live without the closure of a body or a funeral, that is another realm of pain for those condemned to it. For many families of people who have disappeared or who have been lost without the recovery of a body, that lack of certainty can become a permanent state of limbo, caught between fearing confirmation of the worst news, the news that would make certain your darkest fears, and a desire to know at last, to escape the shadows of doubt, and to have some chance of making your peace, of moving on with your life. A cadaver or sniffer dog previously used in the search for the disappeared of the Troubles was brought over from England and an excavator was hired for the search, which involved extensive digging, including tearing out the foundations of a shed floor. For 5 days, the team focused on the Walsh family home, where Barbara had last been seen, and the land surrounding it and the nearby stone outhouse. Their search left them without any answers. Jackie was not surprised that nothing of significance was found. She said afterwards that she knew the focus would come on our father, and that the investigators can rip the land apart, but you will find nothing on Dad's land, because our father had no part in this. In 2016, after a number of delays, a Garda Subaqua unit also searched the nearby lakes. The divers donned wetsuits and strapped tanks of oxygen on their backs, before descending into the brown, murky water to search for Barbara's remains. Connemara is dotted with a seemingly infinite number of lakes, and there have been occasions where the winds and bad weather churn up remains that had previously been settled at the bottom of the brackish waters. Some recent deaths, some predating the famine. However, this time the search proved fruitless. On the 35th anniversary of her disappearance, there was a renewed appeal for information. Barbara Walsh's case was featured on the RTE television programmes Crime Call and Primetime in the hope that it might awaken a memory or produce some new information. The lead detective on the case at the time appealed to the close-knit community in Carna, saying, "We are conscious that we now live in a very different era to 1985, and perhaps now, with that passage of time, people may feel more comfortable sharing information with us." Little seems to have come from this. Those who know crucial information had either passed away or were unwilling to come forward and cooperate with the Gardaí. Jackie and her family felt that there were key areas around Carna which should have been searched and were not. This included areas surrounding the Garda barracks. Jackie also believed that there was a key figure who was present at the Walsh home on the night of Barbara's disappearance who held the answers. He had already been interviewed multiple times by Gardaí, but she believed he knew more. Barbara's children now believe that their mother is dead, but this is far from closure. In 1987, just a few years after Barbara Walsh disappeared, there was, on average, 3 people reported missing every day. 97% of these people were found. For the Walsh family, this was not to be the case. Her 7 children were raised without a mother, and without any idea why. They are all impacted in their own ways. Jackie, whose last memory of her mother was sleeping softly on the couch, found she could never allow her or her own children to sleep on the couch. She lives with the regret of not having tried harder to wake her mother that night, and the regret of not asking her father more while he was alive. She lives with the pain of wondering what life might have been like if this had never happened. She remembers the final words she ever heard her mother say, as Barbara looked over her youngest child, baby Andrea, sleeping in the bedroom that night. Jackie heard her say, "Nobody will have my Andrea." She never heard her voice again. She holds on to happier memories too, the memory of her mother's soft skin and of her warmth when Jackie would climb into bed beside her. Without answers, the pain of a loss like this is often handed down to the next generation. Aideen, Jackie's daughter, has told her, "Ma'am, when you go, I'll keep searching." But Jackie doesn't want her own kids to go through what she went through. She wants the search for her mother to end with her. The home in Rushin na Manach, the one Barbara was once so proud of, the one in which she was raising her family, is now boarded up and overgrown. The wilderness that surrounds it has taken the land back. It is hidden unless you know where to look for it. The mystery of what happened to Barbara Walsh continues, but her family hold on to the hope that someday something will change, and maybe someone will speak up. Her eldest daughter, Catherine, has said, "It's not too late for somebody to say something. It's never too late." And until that day comes, her family will continue the search. As Jackie said, "We're the only voice Mam has left." Thank you for listening to this episode of Lines of Inquiry. If you enjoyed the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review, sharing it on social media, or telling a friend. Make sure to follow the show in your podcast app. Your support helps us to keep exploring these important cases. If you have information you believe could help Gardaí in their search for Barbara Walsh, you can contact Salt Hill Garda Station on 091-514-720 or contact your local Garda Station. Lines of Inquiry is a Go Loud original podcast presented by me, John Sweetman. The podcast is created by Darren Cleary. Our executive producer is Owen Brennan, and Siobhan Walsh is our producer. Sound editing and design are by Neil Kavanagh. This episode was written by Siobhan Walsh, edited by Owen Brennan, and myself, John Sweetman. Join me next time as we open another case and follow the evidence wherever it leads. In the end, everything done in the dark comes to light.